K. It's a step forward.
Hello, how's everybody doing? This is another episode of the Then and Now podcast. This is our live show. I have with me Mr. Brother Ethan Murphy. How you doing, brother?
Sir, happy Halloween. Happy Halloween.
And I have to my right my esteemed other co-host, Mr. Lelouch V, aka Mr. Stinger. How you doing?
Sting meaning. I'm good. I'm excited for this show right now. I'm real excited for this one. Let's get into it.
Okay. I think what everybody wants to start with, which is some smoke we were talking about off screen, we were talking about Halloween Kills, more specifically. The new sequel dropped, I think, last week, some point, maybe the week before that. There's another saga in the Michael Myers, another part of the Michael Myers saga. Otis, I'll just go ahead and let you off the leash and go ahead and rip this apart. What you got to say?
I feel like if you go to your local high school and go to the drama department and have them put together something in about 15 minutes, it'll be a little bit more cohesive than what this Halloween Kills movie turned out to be. Like, it starts off with a scene of a bunch of firefighters going off to, like, fight Michael Myers gladiator style with you know, axes. They got a chainsaw, like, and they said, "Let's get him." I was like, what firefighter has ever said those words on the job, period, in any era? Like, since firefighting has been invented. What? Like, I feel like this movie could not act its way out of a paper bag that's already ripped open. Like, it's B-list is like too high of a standard for what this would be. This has got to be like gamma list. That doesn't even make sense, but like, it's so bad. It is the worst thing I've seen in a long time.
No.
Now, are you saying no? No, did you play that clip? But could you disagree with what he said? Does that mean you love the movie to pieces, Charlie?
I'll save mine for last. Ethan, what do you think about it? What do you think, Ethan?
So I haven't seen this one. I saw the last one, the one that came out a couple of years ago with Jamie Lee Curtis reprising her role. That's when I was on a date. And what's funny about it was, the date was okay. It wasn't that great, but. I remember thinking, I wish my date was more like Jamie Lee Curtis in this movie. I remember thinking that. So it's interesting to hear that this movie is so almost childish or seems ridiculous. Like, let's get him. It seems like, you know, off the wall. So I don't have an opinion of this movie, but I am upset that it's kind of, it seems like it's taking a step down from what the
previous one was. Because honestly, the last one was tolerable. I'll give that one maybe like a 6.5, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. This is like a -3. Like, they are, the first 20 minutes of the movie is them showing scenes of like one of the 1980 Michael Myers movies. Like, we didn't already see that. That's why we're already fucking here watching this one. And then they go into, like, they're at this, like, bar doing a town hall meeting talking about, like, all the people that Michael Myers has killed. And it's like, yeah, but we're going to be here strong. And yeah. And then he starts going on his usual killing spree, because that's what he does when he, you know, is in a movie. That's what Michael Myers does. And it's like, yeah, evil dies tonight. They rally the whole town as we go try to fight him. And it's like, you think this is going to end well? Like, this person has survived everything that you can, like, he's bulletproof, he is fireproof, he is explosive proof. Like, what do you think you're gonna do when the this guy has killed more police officers than donuts? Like, what do you think is gonna happen with these random nobodies that have never been trained in anything go try to kill them? Like, it's not gonna end well. But I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
I don't know. That's what I hear.
I will do a couple things. I will rip this movie apart. I will defend this movie at the same time. There are some aspects that are defendable. Starting off, for the point that Otis had earlier, as far as like them now knowing him being bulletproof and fireproof, this movie, like the last two movies, everything. So the way this works is the first one from 78, the one before this, and this one. Every other movie to that point does not exist. So they don't know anything about him outside of him just like being just like killing his family and then killing the babysitters in the first one. That's all they know about him up to this point. They think he's a regular person.
Yeah, but wasn't part two also part of the canon? Because part two takes place like the say like the next night or that same night or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's like a direct. So yeah. I think it's part one, the original one from the 78 whatever came out. Then the very next part, so part two. I think those are canon, and then it jumps over to the one that came out a couple of years ago. I think that's the chain of events essentially.
Possibly, but I think with those. Those first two movies combined, he killed, what, maybe 10 people with regular means. So, but to that point, all the crazy shit of him getting blown up and shot, we didn't see any of that. So that's why everyone in the town at that point in time believes Michael Myers to be a regular person, is just a fucking serial killer at that point.
Yes. Yeah.
So I will defend. That's the one thing about that. Some of the things in this movie don't make sense, and some of the things make sense but are not executed well. So when it comes, the one issue I have with this movie is that they do a thing that they do with a lot of sequels and a lot of remakes when they reboot a series. They have to give the people that may not have seen this in 78 an explanation on who Michael Myers is and his inspirations. But even then, it's like, of course, with him throughout the decades, he's had so many different inspirations, whether it be him being raised from a cult, him being like a demon, or him being possessed or whatever. They have a million different things. And this one, for whatever reason, they don't really explain why he does what he does. It's kind of weird. Like, this seems like the inspiration they have for the movie is like he wants to go to his home, his childhood home, and look out the window of his sister's room, his sister's old room. So they don't really give you explanation on which I don't really so always.
He wants to go. He wants to go back to his childhood home, and then he wants to go into his sister's room and just look out the window. That's his objective.
Hold on. I'll get there. I'll get to that in a second. But the things in this movie that are weird, the number one thing, like you said before, is like them having to reintroduce Michael Myers, which I don't really think you need to do, because I think he's such an iconic slash. Like, I think he's the one that started it all. I don't think you need to explain who he is. What up, my boy Michael? I gotta put my eyes back on. What up, Mike? I don't think you need to explain who Michael Myers is again, because he's the slasher that kicked it all off. If it was like the Leprechaun or some shit like that, I'd understand them needing to go back and do another reintroduction of the character, give a backstory again. But in the beginning, they went through and like went back to the night of, I think, the first movie to like show Mike again and kind of give like an introduction to him, which I didn't really think you needed. There's a lot of unnecessary things in this movie that they have in there. And it also feels it feels like multiple people worked on this movie, because there are parts that match with each other and other parts that don't match with each other. So it was like, it felt like this movie was cut in two halves for me. A half of like a traditional Michael Myers movie in which he's like the shape and he's going around killing people, and for whatever reason, he's just killing people. And then there's another like half subplot in which he's terrorized the town for 40 years and the town's fed up. So they're going for like a manhunt towards him. So there's like two different things. So it's like the curse of Michael Myers and him just being a serial killer, then like the curse that he has on the town. They make that a point to say that at the end, like a monologue that Laurie Strode has.
Okay.
And another thing, as far as getting to the sister's room again, they have this thing where in the beginning scene where he goes into his sister's room to look out the window. And by the end of the movie, Laurie Strode is in this monologue in which she's describing how Michael Myers, you can't defeat him with brute strength, because there's a thing where he gets jumped by the town, still survives. Like, he has shot three times, beat with a bat in the back a couple times, and then stabbed in the back, but he gets back up. Because she's like, the more people he kills, the less human he becomes. So I guess they're alluding to some kind of supernatural aspect to him finally, like in this canon of the movie.
Okay.
And in the end, she's saying that when he goes to look outside of his sister's window, he's not looking out the window, but he's looking at his own reflection. They don't really give any explanation to why that's important, but that seems to be his modus operandi in this movie, is to like get to his childhood home. Because again, like in every movie, like he's making his way back home. Like, I don't know why that's They don't really explain why that house is so much. Maybe just because it was where he grew up and he committed his first murders at. But the entire movie, he starts at the compound where he was at Laurie's old house from the first one. And then he's making his way to his childhood home now, like just killing people in the path there. And okay. he makes it there. And now he looks in his reflection, but they don't really. I guess they're setting up for another movie to explain that, which I'm not going to say we don't need. We probably don't need it. But if you're going to do it, you need to be more cohesive than this. I will agree with O that this movie is extremely incohesive. And some of the scenes, they feel like they're from two different movies. Like, it felt like they took two Michael Myers movies and combined them into one. Because one scene is like him being dark and killing, and then you don't see him for like another 20 minutes, and now you're like getting a perspective of the people of the town and like how they feel about Michael and how he's affected the town. And then you go back to him killing like four or five more people, and then back into more time perspectives. Laura Strode isn't even in the movie that much. Laura Strode doesn't do that much because she still got injuries from the first one.
Right.
So it's
right.
literally just like the town. They're just focused on the town. It's not even focused on her anymore. Yeah, she's like around
to give a monologue. It's not her versus Mike. Because the first one that came a couple of years ago was about Laurie. It's like generations. It was like Laurie as a grandmother, then Laurie's daughter. It was Judy Greer, and then Judy Greer's daughter, which is Laurie's granddaughter. The three of them versus Michael Myers. And luckily enough, I think most of them survived. We're going to spoil about that. But it seems like what you're saying is not about the daughters or that generation fighting him this time.
It's they just get rid of that subplot altogether. Lord.
Yeah,
they're there, but they're not important anymore.
Then I say it. Okay.
Another thing that kills me is like they make it a. This is how I know it's two different movies or two different people like worked on this. In one scene, they talk about they say it over like his Lori's daughter says it over and over again about how Michael is on his way to the hospital, like he has unfinished business with Lori, like usually would have. And they said a lot, but in actuality, he's not even trying to get there. He's going to his childhood home. So you literally have two different plots.
But it seems like the writers are disconnected. It seems like one writer is saying on page 12, he's going to the hospital. The next writer on page 13 is saying he's going over here instead.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know how they get that disconnect because like all the people are gathered in the hospital at first. It's like, yeah, we're going to get him here. And then two scenes later, like they're out driving through the streets looking for him. It's like, wait, you just said that he was coming here. You all gathered here and had a whole rally in the lobby of the hospital.
That's bad.
But now you're driving out hunting for him? Like, make sense?
That's why when it comes to Oates and his anger for it, I'm not as angry. Like, I'm irritated. But because again, we've seen this a million times with different movies with big studios where multiple hands get their hand in a cookie jar and they make it where it's like a smash up of different things, like Snyder and the Justice League stuff. We saw a full Snyder cut and it was nowhere near as bad as the original one because it was just his vision and not for like another person putting his shit on top of his shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why like I'm irritated that happened. But I don't think that's really a testament on the original story sub, because again, there's no original story. It's like two different stories put in one, which will never make sense.
What I think might be a victim of COVID, as far as they may have shot some things, may have written some things, had a set plan before COVID happened, and then after COVID, things kind of got shifted around, things may have gotten changed or what have you, or they may not have been able to go back and reshoot some different things. And this is what we ended up with. So it still is a Frankenstein's monster of sorts.
And you can tell that because I don't think the studio had faith in this movie. Because I saw almost no promotion for this movie outside of like a couple YouTube ads or whatever on social media. And they had, what's her name? Not Lori, Jamie Lee Curtis. They had her and like the other two co-hosts, like co-stars, like go to like one or two podcast interviews.
So they still had some... out here in LA, I still saw plenty of billboards and things like that. They weren't hiding the movie. And also, it's Halloween. Right. It's kind of like you have to promote it. It's the biggest. It's your golden apple on the best time of year for it, too.
That's my thing. I feel like it was a thing where like they had to put it out because of the money and time they put in it.
Right.
Plus, they didn't have time for reshoots and shit like that.
That's what I think it is. I think it's that if they had their druthers, this would have been delayed maybe another 5-6 months. Who knows how long. But they're like, we have to release
it. I would have preferred that. Because then I would judge it. Like, if I had to rip it apart, I would rip it apart about it being a bad movie.
Yeah.
I don't even like, part of me doesn't want to rip this movie apart so much because it doesn't feel like a movie. It feels like an anthology series.
That is ripping it apart. There.
Yes.
acknowledge it as a movie is ripping it apart.
It's like, let's introduce this random two people, have them talk to each other for 5 seconds. Michael Myers breaks into the house and then murders them. And then next house, same thing. Next house, same thing. But in between that, they're trying to put together these plots that really don't connect to anything, because everything that they say, they don't actually follow through with in execution. It's like, did you watch the movie before you put it out? Like, did you watch it? Like, did you look at your own edits before you released it?
They didn't. Those editors were stressed. Some editors are like, okay, how the fuck do we piece this movie together? Because they didn't give us a lot to work
with.
And like, take this, what happened. Clip it together. That's why, like, I'm irritated, but I'm not angry, because I'm irritated
because somebody got paid to edit this. Somebody got paid to do that shit.
The edits were great. No, I ain't talking about the edits. The edits were crazy. What I'm mad at is the writing, or like the management when it came to the writing, because like, you know from a fact this movie had more like had a plethora of writers on it, like more than needed for them to have two separate plots. Like, it felt like, all right, you're not doing what I want you to do. We're firing him. We're firing you. You go off of what he did. All right, we'll get you some help. What, like, there's too many hands in the cookie jar. If this movie would have had the one subplot of like, really all I wanted from this movie, finish the plot you have from the first one on the connection between Michael and Laurie Strode. Either kill her and keep more sequels going after that and have him have some other motivation, or kill him and end the series. You need to
let's do that. Let's talk about what the movie should have been. That's a good idea that you had there, Dev. You said finish the storyline, essentially have it where, because that's something that they've done in more recent years. They try to have it where it's a full baton toss to the next generation. They set that up in the last film. It could have been nice in a way if
that's what I thought was coming. I thought, like, okay, you know, you finally get rid of Jamie Lee Curtis. Now you got a daughter and a granddaughter to follow.
Right. Let's do that. It's a perfect successful hit. And actually, I thought in the first one, I thought the last one she was going to die. Actually, I thought she would actually die. She pretty much stabbed him, and they'd fall together down that fire in the house together. I'd be like, you know, that's fine. She went out like a soldier, like a hero, taking down her, you know, her little brother that was a monster, or not a monster, brother, but taking down that monster.
Not related in this one.
But taking down that monster, you know, defending her family. Like, that's dope. But they didn't go that route, and then it seemed like, well, they were going to possibly she'd be dead in this one. Nope, I guess not. So whatever it is, but I agree that they should try to wrap up that storyline. Let her, you know, go to rest, essentially.
I will say the pros, because I've ripped this movie apart enough. Positive things I do have to say about this movie. The biggest positive is the actor of Michael Myers and his body language of acting. Like, there are certain kills where he does this weird thing that I really love with Michael Myers specifically, where like he choked out the cop in the first scene, right? And as soon as he kills his cop, he immediately just turns and walks away like he's uninterested in the other cop there. Like, he moves with a purpose. Like, he's literally like an animal in the sense of like an apex predator. Like, all right, kill you. I'm here now. I'm going here. He's not emotionally there. Like, you can tell he's like, his mask being a blank face very much so matches the personality of Michael Myers in the sense of I have objective. I finish objective. I go here. And like, his movements are so like quirky and like terrifying in the sense. It's kind of like eerie. The fact that like a guy's screaming at you has a gun pointed at you and you're just like, nah, fuck you. I'm going over here now.
Right.
Like, he immediately just turns. And like, the way he does the kills aren't the most super creative kills, but just the way this guy's actor, I don't know who he is, I had to find his name. I probably should have figured it out beforehand. The way he like acts out these kills, like, we talked about it before with Squid Game and how like in that they spoke a whole different language, but the acting was so good in like the facial features, the voice inflections and things like that, things that you don't really get that you can't hear them say. That acting was so great that it left an impression on you. He left a great impression on me. He didn't say a single word, but in his actions and the way he like moved, I was terrified. Like, not terrified, but like, I was like, ooh, that's kind of, I think it's kind of creepy.
It was believable.
I mean, he was intimidated. He's like, if I see that thing, I'm not fucking with it. I'm going the other way. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
I will give you that. Like, the execution of the kills, like the kills specifically, was pretty well done. Like, the animatics, like, you know, of all the blood splatter and stuff like that, like, they did a good job there. Like, but that was it. Like, they put all their folk, like, all right, we're going to pay the people, you know, that do that a lot of money so they can do that well. And then it was like, we got some singles to throw at these actors over here. You go say some lines. You got like four lines for you.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
right.
Some of the actors, and like, were, yeah, like, the, like, Jimmy, like, the big actors, Jamie Lee Curtis and, like, the daughters, they were fine. But some of the other actors is like, did you pull him off the street to come do this? Or
is he an actor? Is she an actor?
This person lived in a place where he's never watched a movie before, and they had to like then go give their impression of what they think would be in a movie, and then then they get killed by Michael Myers. So it turned out well for him in the end, I guess.
Yeah, and for us, because he's no longer around. I do want to transition real quick. Speaking of a person seeming like death walking towards you, real quick, Otis, did you see the trailer for Batman or The Batman?
Yeah. I have not seen it yet.
How is that possible? How is that possible?
Because I thought we were going to do the reaction video today.
Yeah.
Today? Oh, did
that was literally when you told me, you were like, yeah, I don't know if I want to be on it. I'm like, all right, let me see if I can get Otis. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, cue it up. We're doing it right now. I'm like, okay, I guess we're doing it right now.
Okay, so I accidentally cock-blocked Otis. My bad. I didn't mean to do that. And then today you spent all day watching Halloween Kills instead of watching the Batman trailer. Woo! Ooh, decisions there. That's a
Before we move completely off topic of Halloween, I will like to bridge the gap between the two in a transition. The last thing I'll say about this movie, as far as like the acting again, I'll go into the physical acting again. Michael Myers in this movie felt a lot more aggressive and like sadistic and twisted than he did in other movies. Like before, he would like admire his work, like you saw when in the first one, he stabbed that one kid through the wall and kind of looked at him for a minute. Like, damn, I really did that. This one, he's like physically and mentally torturing people. Like there's one scene in particular with an old couple in a house where like he kind of kills the old man and then kind of kills the old lady, but like sets the old lady up on the ground where she has to watch him like test out knives on her husband. Like he
goes through the whole like chopping block of, how everybody has the block of knives, right, in their kitchen.
In horror movies,
picks one up, stab.
Just like he makes you watch.
Yeah. Here's the thing about that though. That almost seems out of character for Michael.
Yeah.
Michael,
I've never seen him. Problem.
Does it though?
Yes, it definitely does. Because he isn't a showman for one thing. He's very much like, I have a purpose. I'm here to do this.
You're just in my way.
You're just in my way. I don't give a shit about you. I don't give a shit about anybody. So for him to be like, hey, watch me put on this show, watch me torture you, watch me delight in killing, Mike doesn't really seem the kind of person that delights in killing. It's just that he just does it. He's really good at it.
I'll disagree with that with a couple kills from the first movie, the one that's canon. Okay. The first one I talked about, obviously, where he picked one guy up and stabbed him through the chest, and he like sat there and admired his work for a minute.
You're saying admired. Nice. I don't see that as admired. He tilts his head. Tilting your head,
that's crazy.
That's kind of what we've seen kids, little small children, they will tilt their head in curiosity at something. I always saw that, and I just saw that we just talked about the making of. They have they just put up on Netflix, and they have the whole idea of the making of behind the scenes and everything with Halloween, and for that, or the movies that made us, as it's called. And they talked about there how when they're making that movie, all John Carpenter said to the actor Nick that was inside the suit, he said, was like, just tilt your head. Just tilt your head, quote unquote, in curiosity. That's what he said to him directly. He said, okay, I don't know what it means. And then he did it. He said, oh, okay, I get it. The idea is almost like death to Mike Myers is a weird concept. It's inhuman in a sense. He kills a lot, but it doesn't feel the same way to him that would anybody else, like a sociopath. It's very disconnected to it. So I never saw it as him delighting in killing. It's more like, I don't even understand what's happening, or it doesn't matter. It doesn't bother me. It's just, this is just happening.
Another kill. Second kill then. Maybe you have another explanation for this one. In the one where after he just, it's like following this one I just talked about, after he kills that guy and he goes to the girlfriend who's sitting in the bed, he puts a sheet over his face. Not only that, puts the guy's glasses on to make her think it's him. If that's not a showman or showmanship or like having a game or having fun with your kill, I don't know what else is, because you could have just walked in and killed her, no effort. But
I agree, make
her think it's you. And then other times where he like shows himself, like he'll walk up on people and then walk away, or like show him, like he makes himself known just to put fear in people and then walk away. Like I look at it like a child, like you said, with a child where he's like having little fun, he's having fun with his kills. It's like a child.
That's fair. And the one I never understood why he put on. It's weird on like several levels.
Yeah,
put it on the bed sheet and then put on the glasses. Even within the context of the movie, it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you hiding Mike Myers? That's the scariest thing is that he's like wearing that mask. Why would you put a goofy sheet over him in shades. But I think the only way I've been able to rationalize that over all these years is more or less he still has the mind of a child on some level.
Exactly.
He's playing. It's almost like he doesn't even understand what's happening. It's a different thing. I don't know that he's trying to do it for show.
How often do you, when you talk to a kid, you say, hey, don't touch that or don't do that? And the kid will look at you as he's slowly touching that thing like he's having fun. And like, that's, again, I say that because he's in the mindset of a child. That's why I'm like, I don't think it's completely off brand for him to be like, hey, I'm going to kill him and make you watch and you can't do anything about it. You can't stop
me. Fair. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. That's my mindset on it.
I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I think part of it is what I do like about it is because he is obscured in the mask. He never talks, never even breathes really. It's meant to be left up to interpretation. I think Otis and I on some level see him as much more of a like force of nature, kind of just he is darkness. I mean, he's literally called the shape in the original script.
Yeah.
But I do see what you're saying though too, Deb, and it happens all the time with the characters over time. They evolve in some way or something happens. So
yeah, it means possible. Yeah. And I say that this is transitioning into our main topic about slashers. We obviously wanted to, because in preparation for, we're going to do a slasher draft next week. We wanted to talk about some of our favorite slashers and about just things we like about them. And one thing I will go into as far as regarding Jason Voorhees. In the documentary that Ethan had us look at, it's called, for anybody that hasn't watched, it's called The Movies That Made Us. And they kind of do episodically go through each big movie that really changed the film industry. I think this season was specifically horror. And for the Jason Voorhees one, within the first 5 minutes, the guy said, he said that Halloween was making money. Let's rip that off. And you see a lot of same resemblances between Michael and Jason, in which Jason also has the mind of a child when he goes about killing. Like he does the same thing where like he'll kill somebody and like, damn, that's crazy. And like he has the mindset of a child.
Yeah.
That's one thing I like about Jason in general is, one, he's probably a little bit more aggressive than Michael. I kind of enjoy a little bit more of the gore from the early ones. I'm not like Saw level gore, but like I love practical effects. So the fact if you can make somebody's head look like it exploded with like clay and make it look good, I'm like, I think that's dope. That's talent. I'll enjoy that.
Yeah, well, there's one big difference that between Jason and Michael, Mike Myers, is that Mike Myers wasn't motivated by vengeance. He wasn't wronged by the people he's killing in any way. Jason essentially kind of was. Like, obviously, these aren't the exact camp counselors that fucked him over when he was a kid, but the camp, he obviously feels like the camp let him down and he died because of the counselors not doing their jobs. So he is directly motivated by vengeance on some level. So it's his mom in the first movie.
What about Jason X and Ethan? How do you explain that?
I refuse to explain that. That is a movie that doesn't exist. Jason X is right up there with the Last Airbender and Dragon Ball Z Evolution. Like, what the hell is this nonsense?
I don't think the people who wrote Jason X know how to explain exactly what they're doing there. It's like,
well, I know because I did my research.
Please explain, because what the fuck is that?
Yeah,
literally, what Jason X and Jason Goes to Hell. They were preparing for Jason versus Freddy, or Freddy versus Jason. They were like preparing to do like the crossover because they just got the rights from, I believe. And they were like, well, we can't not make a movie for like 3 years. We have to put something out. So they really just like made two bullshit movies to fill up the slots. But also with the Jason X one, they put it in the future.
Like connected it all to.
Yeah, they put it in the future so that it won't mess with the timeline of what happened in the past, because it already happened.
So they don't have to worry about whatever happens in Jason versus Freddy. Exactly. Completely irrelevant. That what you just did is you just said that they're even dumber than we even thought. So
I will say these movies are fun. Slashers, as bad as they are, I can't think of any slasher really outside of maybe Scream, possibly, in which the story was cohesive and was fun. People watch slashers to see the slasher, like prey upon people and kill them in creative ways. I will say Jason X. It was fun. It was funny in a lot of ways too. Like niggas dying on the corkscrew and getting screwed down, or like the fuck, I think the most notorious Jason kill probably ever, outside of like the sleeping bag kill, is the one where he dipped old girl's face in like nitrogen and like froze her face to it and smashed her face. Like, it has creative fun kills like that. And that was done with prosthetics too. So I'm just like, that's what I go with for slashers for when I go like a slasher category. Just kill people in fun, creative ways and have like a fun, creepy little backstory about why you're a sociopath.
Right. Yeah, I feel it. I I feel you. It's a so we're getting to slashers here. Yeah. So quick question for y'all, for Otis and Charlie. Which franchise do you have more fun watching? Or let's say what's the most fun franchise?
The most fun slasher
overall, not just Friday the 13th or Halloween, but overall slasher franchise, which is most fun for you to watch?
For me, it is Scream. Just because it feels like, again, like out of all the major slasher franchises, it has the most cohesive story. And then, like, at least there's like some type of mystery to be solved as you're going through those things. All the others is like, yeah, the guy's here. He's going to kill everybody that's near. So just get as far away as possible or you're going to die. You know, I prefer, you know, if I'm going to watch something, I want to like at least be mentally stimulated as along with watching, you know, the gore fest. It's like, okay, like, I at least got to figure out who the killer is. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's at least that mystique to it. With, like, you know, like Michael Myers, Freddy, you know, Jeepers Creepers, so many other slasher creatures. Like, there's nothing to figure out. It's like, yep, it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, two things. One, I will disagree with his point on Jeepers Creepers. I was going to use Jeepers Creepers as like that little trilogy as like one of my favorites. I don't know if it's just because the black culture, for whatever reason, they're like, it's weird how like certain movies that like aren't marketed towards black people will like latch on to that movie and it's like a thing that every black family has seen. I don't think there's been a single black family or a black person I've ever met that hasn't seen Jeepers Creepers 1 and 2. Like, we love that movie for whatever reason.
The thing is, you said black families. I know my family hasn't watched Jeepers Creepers. My mom and sister aren't going to watch Jeepers Creepers, but I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, that one I enjoyed just because the whole, I love creature features and, like, finding out the motivations of the creatures. Like, he didn't really have, a tradition, like, a Scream-level, like, reason for killing because he's, like, animalistic. And finding out, like, the nuances of how he works and why he works was fun. I don't know if you guys have seen the third one. The third one's kind of forgettable. I ain't gonna lie to you, but it was fun. Like, you learn more about him.
Now, I guess the thing is, this is one thing we had to define real quick, though. So, slashers. Mm. When we're talking about slashers, because these aren't force of nature baddies; these are deliberate, you know, sentient things. Mm-hmm. Even Mike Myers is still a sentient living being. He's a man. You know, mental disorders or what? You know, or not. Same as Jason Voorhees. He was at least a living being. Freddy Krueger, they're all sentient guys. So with Jeepers Creepers, isn't that the point that he's actually an insect or a bug or giant? Like, nah, is that a bat.
So he's a bat.
It's a bat. Okay. So like does demon. That count as a slasher? As a, would you consider that a slasher?
In that particular case, I do, just because it's filmed in the slasher format. Like, you know, the creature is hunting them down specifically. Like, he chooses a target. He's right. Going after that target. And like, they're gonna die by the time within the span, if they can get away within the span, because he's only out for like what, like 27 days?
He has a limited, yeah.
So he has 27 days in the killing cycle. And it's like every 10, I think it's every 20 or 30 years, he has 27 days in that killing cycle.
Because I thought it was like roughly around the same time as Locust, but it's not the same as Locust. But no, yeah.
I will agree. I will consider him a slasher because in the way he goes about his kill, he does things like mimic voices or use bodies to make you think he's somewhere else. Like, he does the slasher things. Like, he's a force of nature, but he's a sentient force of nature. Like, he's like, all right, I got to get this done 27 days real quick so I can get my food and I can go back to sleep.
Okay, all right.
Like, everything he does is, like, fully deliberate. Like, he's going after that kid.
And meditated. I see. Right. I see. Okay.
Like, now, he's not like, you know, like, the thing was like, well, you're just going to eat because he's
a voracious monster.
Right, right, yeah.
Which is my personal favorite, but that's not a slasher.
Yeah, I know.
But the, you know my taste. But so for the xenomorph from the Alien franchise, the xenomorph is not a slasher, though. Even though Alien 1 is very much filmed closest to a slasher, it's not a slasher movie. Or he's not a slasher, though. It's not a slasher, right?
No,
I say slasher adjacent.
It's slasher adjacent. It is slasher adjacent.
Slasher things in this kill, like the way he stalks.
Does do slasher things. And it's filmed a slasher movie in lots of ways.
Yeah.
But it's not. So,
what do you. We've said that. Like, what elements make up a slasher to you guys? Like, is it the jump scares? Is it the, you know, the intent of the kills? Is it the creativity behind the kills? Is it like, what makes a slasher on film to you guys?
I talked a lot this episode, so you go ahead. You started off.
No, you're fine. You're fine. The host. All I was going to say was, I think you're right. That you touched on it right there when you said the nature of the kills. It's the sensational, the way they sensationalize the kills. The kills are kind of the draw. So when you see how a person is killed, like, you know, seeing a guy get impaled, and that's a big, huge thing, or seeing how the person's afraid and then they get actually getting slashed, that is a big draw. I think that has to be incorporated in a movie becoming or being thought of as a slasher. Is that the only defining trait? No. But the kills being, you know, a linchpin of the film is definitely what makes it part of the slasher.
So for me, I have a criteria. I think it's like around three. Maybe if I think of more, I'll think of more. But right now, at the top of my head, I have three criteria that needs to be met for a slash for me. One, decently cool backstory. Like, have a reason on why you're going on a murder spree. Whether you're a sociopath, it's revenge, you've been tortured, you're possessed. That I have something cool to make me care about the character to some aspect, whether I hate him or love him. Secondly, creative kills. Like, not even, I want to say just creative, just like kills. Oh, combining my second and last one, the stalking, because again, I feel like with a slasher, it's all about like stalking prey and stalking and killing of your prey. You can kill them in creative ways if you want to be a good slasher, like the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff, Freddy, Halloween. Like, if you want creative kills and you want to be successful, you have that. But it really is just like creative backstory and stalk and kill prey. And that's why I always use like the Xenomorph and like Jeepers Creepers. It's more like horror, like slasher adjacent, because they're meeting those criteria, but they're, the reason they're doing it is more like they're a force of nature versus like they have a reason for doing it.
What would you say? What would you qualify? How would you qualify?
I would just say like it has to be a intelligent thing hunting people, like. In that aspect, like I almost consider Predator a slasher.
I was gonna bring that up. I do consider it a slasher.
It
I
is, sure.
But go on.
Sorry, go on. Yeah, it's like it's just like a sentient thing hunting people for whatever purpose that is, and it has, they're glorifying the kills. You know,
yes.
And that's Predator down to a T. Like, 100%. Yay, kills. Mark myself with kills. Now 100%. Go build next.
And not only that, as opposed to the dumbass teenagers having sex, he's hunting our 80s action tropes, 80s action heroes, essentially. Mm-hmm. But it's very much the same idea. Obviously, oftentimes in slashers, it is the kind of the teens having sex that get hunted. However, there's nothing to say that has to be that way. It's just people, prey, being hunted by the slasher. And that's 100% what the Predator is doing in the first one. Forget that sequels. But in that first one, that's what he's doing. He's very much like that.
Speaking on slashers, I want to pitch a movie to Otis real quick. It's another Predator sequel, right? So we're going to have the Predator, right? It's going to be Predator 5, the Chirac Dreadpocalypse. Hold on.
I'm leaving the show. I'll retire. I quit.
You know what you said out loud. Your mouth. Y'all heard it out loud.
Who's produced by Spike Lee? Is Spike Lee doing this one too?
Yeah, it's obviously Spike Lee.
Oh, yeah. Predator comes to Chicago. He's like, damn, all these niggas got dreads like me. They got to be part of it. They got to be Yowzor just like me. And he comes through and takes over. He finds Chief Keef, right? And makes him make a soundtrack for the Predators.
The problem is, I can easily see this being made into a movie for real. Like, there's, you've seen the shit they're putting out there. You saw Malignant, Charlie. I mean, that is half a step.
Watch 30 minutes of this movie.
I'm watching the whole thing tonight. I'm actually watching because I'm curious now. I'm actually sometimes movies dip into the area where it's so bad you have to see it more out of more
curiosity. This is one of those.
Yeah,
I will say it's fun. You'll have fun watching it.
I'll watch it tonight.
You'll have fun.
Yeah, it is sad though that the hell's happened. Like the last two big featured horror films have been like borderline comedies, like this. Wild misfire, like Malignant in this, wild misfires. What's going on?
And then going back a little bit before that, it borderline comedy too.
Some of that was a little deliberate as far as the clown being, but some of it wasn't.
Yeah.
Some of it wasn't, but yeah.
I saw one director, at least within like the last couple of years, I forgot who was what. I can't remember what director was in particular, But he said with horror in like the last 2 years, they've been trying to make things not as dark because the world's been so dark with like everything going on. So they're trying to like bring some brightness into the world while also keeping people fans of their the franchise, the type of movie
you love. You choose slasher movies. No, you choose horror movies to bring some light to people.
That's the problem.
Well, there are millions of comedy, like slasher comedies.
Yeah, but like
you should should do it right.
This is the medium you choose. This is the medium. Like you could pick like soap operas, like any other thing.
Well, the thing is, they're trying to keep the genre they love alive. Like for me, it'd be like with anime. If anime was on a slope where like it's still a big thing, but it's not the dominating thing like it once was, and people are trying to make different anime to make people happy. You know what I mean? Like it's the format you love, so you're gonna make movies in the genre that you love, but you're trying to make it appeal to people at that time while also being, because one thing I've noticed when I watch any documentary on like horror, all the horror directors and people involved are amazing people. Like they're just nice. Like it's funny to me, like the nicest people are people that are dreaming up ways to like slaughter people.
It varies. I mean,
repressed aggression. That's what that is. Yeah. That is repressed aggression manifesting on film.
Right.
Literally, you hear a million like horror stories of people working with like Christian Bale or like other actors in other like A-list movies. But then you watch any documentary on like the making of a horror movie, they're like friends, they're playing cards. Like the killer's like playing with the kids. Like even in like Bill Skarsgård, he was like, yeah, the kids were scared of him the first day, but after that, he was cool with the kids for the rest of the shoot. Right. They were like all chilling.
Yeah. I mean, it varies. I mean, obviously, like you know, John Carpenter and his crew that worked on Halloween, because it was shoestring budget, and they were they all knew each other. They're all friends when they made Halloween 1 together, and Wes Craven was the person who like made like basically softcore skin flicks for a while and other little things, and he was offered to make horror movies. He's like, I don't want to do that. So it's almost like horror isn't what they choose to do. It's kind of what they fall into. Sam Raimi, when he made Evil Dead, he made Evil Dead because it's all he could afford to do as a film student. So horror isn't like again necessarily like they are super dark evil people. It's like Otis said, that people are working through their own stuff, or people who have it's a genre to explore. Not so much that they just have so much violence in them. One of Otis and I's favorite shows, Hannibal, by Brian Fuller. Brian Fuller is you see this guy is like what? So it's bananas. It is not at all what you'd expect.
So, Otis, did you plan on doing Halloween for your either or segment? Or is it really that good segment?
Oh yeah.
I mean for his is it really that good segment? I have the either or.
Yeah, is it really that good? Or. I mean, yeah, I didn't know if he had a different one if he planned to do this one. So just in case.
Oh.
Well, just to finish that segment up.
It was really good.
That was long. All right. I guess Ethan will get into your segment and start the either or. If you're cool with starting,
I'm not ready to write. I have to type it up first. So go ahead and do Otis's first. Plus, you just played his. We just did his
pretty much for like an hour and a half.
But still,
I mean, I can add a little more to it while Ethan gets set up. You know, the Halloween franchise has always been a staple of the Halloween season. It's literally in the name. But has it ever really been like good? Like ever? Like have you ever seen a Halloween movie and said like, man, that was a really good movie? Or it's like, I saw it and you talk about it with your friends, but like, is it really like you saying like, man, like I can't wait to see the next one. You know, when's the next one come out? Next Halloween. That's never happened. It's like, yeah, we saw it. We talked about it. There's some kills. It's just like, what the fuck is you doing? I saw a lot of titties, you know what I'm saying? And then just forget about it until the next one is getting promoted the next year. It's never been good. Never been good. No one's ever awarded an award from it that's meaningful.
See, so I'll counter that. I feel like that viewpoint is slightly biased due to, one, the things you're into and the people you hang around. Because, again, like you told me, you told, at least if I'm wrong, correct me, that you're cool with horror, but you're not a huge fan of like the horror genre like that, correct? Or am I wrong in that?
Incorrect. I've always like if there's a horror thing out, I've always been drawn to watching it, but it's just never been good. It's just like I watched and was like, maybe this one be good. Nope. Maybe this one be good. Nope. Like it's like me trying to like I don't know how to. I guess it's like a drug, kind of. It's like I'm trying to get to that first level of high that I hit, and just like never got there. Like, cause the first horror movie that I saw that really, really scared me, and I think this might be a good segment for, I mean, not segment for, subject for next week, is The Exorcist. The Exorcist, I saw that. That shit fucked me up. Like, seeing ghosts, I saw it pretty young. I was like 5 years old.
So you were five.
And, like,
you saw Exorcist when you were 5 years old?
I saw it when I was five, yeah.
What are your parents doing?
They were gone. I found it. my dad told me specifically not to watch this movie.
And that's why you watch it. Yeah, that's exactly why you watch it. I gotta
go do that.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've pretty much been looking for a movie that scared me as much as that. Because, like, even though it scared me, like, I was like, I gotta finish it. I gotta finish it. I'm sitting there shaking in my bed, like, I gotta keep going.
Yeah.
I've wanted that again, and I've never really had it.
And see, I think that's the difference when it comes, like, the thing with horror. I think everyone has that story of, like, when they're watching it, when they're, like, young and they're not supposed to be watching it, and that's what gets you addicted to it. But for me, being in, like, different communities, like, me just watching different communities and being in, like, different channels, what I've noticed, one, the horror community is a lot bigger than I thought it was, one. And two, they are not they're not really watching it for the scare or being terrified as much as they're watching it for just creating, like I said, with creativity and, like, skills and things like that. They're talking about it for the conversation. Like, they enjoy different things about it than we would. I feel like because we watch things, like, again, I blame this on Otis. I hate him for this. We critique things in a different aspect. Like, when we critique a movie, we're critiquing over cohesiveness of plot, this making sense and this making sense. But I think with horror, because it's so absurd, and especially with a lot of the biggest horror franchises being, like, slightly comedic, it's not supposed to make sense.
It's supposed to
be a fun thing.
And I think it is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be fun. But a movie should be coherent regardless of any and all circumstances. And that's the thing. If you watch movies, even slashers from the 80s gone, slasher films from the 60s, 70s, back to Hammer films in the 50s or what have you, they all make sense. That's the idea. They have to make sense. You're never excused for making sense. This Halloween Kills movie, Otis is said thoroughly how it just does not make sense. You never have a carte blanche, blank check to just not make sense. You are beholden to that no matter what. I'm sorry.
The reason I disagree with that is because even in a documentary you had us watch, they talked about it up until Halloween in 78, the movie industry was dying. Like, nobody was watching movies. So these cohesive killers and slashers that are around that are making sense are not selling. But it's not until 78 and the 80s, and, like, I guess the 90s when, or the height of horror. The height of horror.
You're saying that the movie industry was failing because movies made sense.
No, I'm saying it failed. Like, I'm saying with these horror, like, with these particular slasher movies, these movies were not doing well.
Sure.
For whatever reason. And once horror became...
Because there weren't any titties in them yet.
Possibly. Once horror became really comedic, you get killers like...
When they had titties.
When Friday and with Freddy Krueger. And with Freddy is the biggest example. When Freddy was, like, in his prime, he's cracking jokes saying, I got you, bitch, and doing all this other stuff. People love him and adore him for being crazy, being goofy, and not making sense.
He still makes sense, though. He's having fun. The one that people like the most for Freddy either is 1 or 3. And 3 is what they call the Dream Warriors. That has the most plot out of all of them. It makes the most sense out of all of them.
Makes no sense.
No. It's actually the girl being his daughter? It's a script that's tangible. It actually follows a through line. It actually is coherent. 1 is coherent, 2. The things you don't like to see, think about this way right now in our world right now, Charlie. We're talking about Malignant and Halloween Kills. Imagine if you went to the theater, Otis, and saw Halloween Kills. If you paid full price for Halloween Kills,
you want a
refund, or you say, fuck this, I will never come and see another Halloween movie in the theater again. And that's what happens. Bad quality is what keeps people away from paying for something. You're not going to pay full price for something you don't like. And if it doesn't make sense to you, why would you like it?
I disagree in the sense of not the bad quality thing, yes. Well, no, not the bad quality thing. Whether you liking it or not, people like things. We're not going to act like people don't like things that aren't good quality, or at least good quality according to us. Because again, sure, we analyze things on a lot higher level than 90% of the world does.
Or a different level.
There are a million things for different
things. That's
fair. Yeah, there are things like Dude, Where's My Car? Like movies like that, or like American Pie, movies that are not great in quality at all. But they're fun, and they bring levity, and people have fun with those movies. People value fun over anything else, which is why you have a lot of bad
movies. I do agree with that, but I don't think that they're mutually exclusive. I don't think that something can't be fun and not make sense. Or
they're not. They're not.
You can make sense and have fun.
I think you can. I think we make the mistake of judging these things based off our standard and not why. Like, that's like people coming, like when you have people come into the anime community, right? And they're like, why do you enjoy cartoons and people fighting in a cartoon? We enjoy that because it's in our community. That's what we like. I feel like that's us going into the horror community being like, why do you like this dude just killing people randomly in like crazy ways? And the plot doesn't make sense.
But think about what you just said earlier, what you said as far as one of your criteria for a slasher movie is that the killer has essentially a motive behind what they're doing, or you like understanding. You like understanding why the killer is doing their thing. That's when your own personal criteria for a slasher movie.
That's for
a connective tissue of logic.
That's how I identify a particular subsection under the horror. I'm talking about us judging horror in general. Like, horror survived off of these fans loving the good, the bad, and the corny movies. Like, they love them because these movies still sell out. Especially
I think horror survives off of teenagers being horny and needing something to take a date to. I think that's how that works. I'm pretty sure.
I don't even think
it is a huge factor. And the thing is, the biggest draw for most horror movies is ultimately great, gruesome, awesome kills. Yeah, absolutely. But if the movie is so illogical that it gets in the way of your enjoyment, that it's not fun, people aren't going to want to watch it. It's just what it boils down to.
Well, my thing, obviously, it's not to that point because it sells. Like, I'm not saying that the movie can be dog shit terrible and it'll sell. Sure. I'm just saying it's dog shit by our standard is what I'm saying. Like, by people that are fans of it. Because I've watched a lot more independent indie like horror movies that aren't the best quality as, like, it's not gonna have the same budget as Halloween Kills, or it may not even have the same.
Oh, well, yeah, and I'm not even talking things about
like
Halloween Kills.
Things like Mandy.
I'm not even talking about that movie at all. I haven't seen it.
There are movies like Mandy or Basket Case or different movies like that where they're horror movies. They're really like off the wall and crazy and probably don't, they make sense. They're cohesive, but they don't make sense. But they're cult classics within the horror community, and they love, like, they hold those movies close to their chest. The same way us in the anime community or us in the comic community will hold certain comic runs or certain movies to our chest. I just don't want to impose our standards on something else when we're not really in the community like that. Like, we're not, like, you have like Captain America stuff in your background. You don't have a bunch of Scream or horror paraphernalia in your background. Like,
no, I took an entire writing class on writing horror. Yeah. I do know the genre. I do understand the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
And it is fundamental. It's, again, there are fundamentals with any kind of storytelling. And I don't care who you are, what you are, what you're making. I hold everyone to the same standard for telling a story. If you're going to charge me full price every time across the board for what I see for my entertainment, then I'm damn well going to hold you to the same standard every time. Period.
And I agree. I agree with that. But I'm part of the kin that I do. People pay for experiences also. People will pay something.
They do.
That's my only thing. It's like, I personally would rather it be good and be fun, but I will not deny that people will pay for something just to experience it, even if it's good or bad. Like, they just want to be there and be in the moment.
You're right there too, because you can have, there are movies that have guilty pleasures as well, that things that don't, there are plot holes or whatnot, things that don't make sense in movies that I enjoy. That happens. Of course it does. And I think ultimately, if you can have fun watching something, if the fun exceeds the logic, cares. But again, like I said, if the logic gaps are so massive that you can't, that it gets in the way, it obstructs your joy, then that's a problem. Right. That's
what I think. There's a lot of that in horror.
I think there's more than that than you might think. I think there's like a whole bunch of like B-list movies where like, so like some of like what was that movie that came out of a couple years ago, like The Green Room or something like that?
Yeah,
where
Green
it's like
Room.
That's exactly what it's called. That movie made no sense whatsoever. I'm sorry. Like, none. I didn't even want to finish watching it.
Where they play music at a neo-Nazi bar.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any more in horror than there is in any other genre. Like, I could ask Otis right now to name off 50, like probably 100 bad anime, and he could do it off the top of his head right now.
Sure.
Or 100 bad action movies, or 100 bad Marvel movies, or 100 bad, like, there's going to be those in every genre. I just,
of course,
I feel like horror gets picked on a lot because it was so big.
Well,
like,
I agree that horror is, or, you know, genre films, whatever, they are put under weird kind of scrutiny, or they're kind of attacked as being lesser than a lot. And that's true. That's very true. And there are plenty of bad movies in every genre that exists. I completely agree with that too. There are plenty of movies. Like, I mean, for example, one of the worst movies I've seen in the past few years was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I hated that movie to pieces. Yeah. And that is a big, huge Quentin Tarantino 3-hour Oscar-nominated movie. And I hated it, every inch of it. I had more fun watching Malignant than I did watching that. And Malignant is a bonkers, off-the-wall movie. But as far as I'm concerned, there's a much clearer logic line on Malignant than there is in fucking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So every
movie... Man, you said that with your whole chest, didn't you?
I was a little more easy comparison. Like, everyone on the planet knows that... just notice we're live. Yeah, we're live.
Did he come in before?
Yes, hello, Michael.
See us waving at you. We at you in real time. We see your face.
Yeah, but everyone on the planet knows that The Dark Knight is a significantly better movie than like something like The Avengers. Yeah.
Right.
But are you going to sit down and rewatch The Dark Knight right now, or are you going to sit down and watch The Avengers? If you had to choose,
it's like easier to watch Avengers, probably. I mean, people will watch Dark Knight again, but it's a lot easier to watch, you know, Avengers. Easy.
See, personally, I get on. Sexually throw that kind of guy. I mean,
yes. I think what Blaine may be talking about too, like, for example, one of our favorite movies is Silence of the Lambs. That's a psychological thriller, great movie. And I've watched it multiple times, but it's not necessarily the easiest watch to just jump into every time. It's not fun.
We do our live shows on Sundays. Everything else pre-recorded, but we go live on Sundays.
Yeah.
Look, go ahead. My bad. You can go ahead. Continue.
No. I was just saying we're just talking about the idea. And I do like this conversation because it is very much ambiguous and it's left up for interpretation and things like that. It depends on what you consider fun, and it depends on what you consider a bridge too far in logic. Some people, like Charlie, some people will genuinely won't mind any of the logic gaps in Halloween Kills, and they'll have so much fun with the kills themselves that they'll enjoy the movie overall. That's perfectly fine. That's great. More power to you. And there's some people that are be like Otis that are much more strict about that kind of stuff, and they will not give any kind of quarter, and they'll be done. So it's the entire audience is going to have different views on things. That's how everything boils down.
The only reason I've written for horror so hard is I'm a big person about keeping the same energy when it comes to things. And I see a lot of things that people get on the horror about that I'll see in like the action genre of movie, like an action movie, like Transformers. That got away with selling so much money, and people know it's bad, but it got away with so much because there's action and Megan Fox or attracting.
Fast and Furious.
Exactly. Fast and Furious franchise. Franchise doesn't make sense, but it's making all kinds of money.
And people know it's bad. People don't really get on those movies as hard as they'll get on the horror. Horror for me, as long as I've been, especially like growing up in my household, like it's the devil or da da da, which is already, I get it because you're in the traditional South, you look at any murder, da da da. But already there's that stigma already, and then the stigma of like, oh, they only have titties in this, that's why it's popular, da 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 da. Things that other franchises or other types of movies get away with and they don't get ripped apart as hard on, they do it more, if not just as much, or just as much, if not more, than horror does. Well, it's just a genre.
I think Expendables has less titties than any horror movie ever.
Which one?
Expendables, like the franchise.
Expendables. Yeah, has more. Has less titties than man titties.
You got man titties. Yeah. You got Terry Crews in that. So
yeah, Terry Crews. Yeah, and Terry Crews has his contract where he has to take his shirt off at least twice in everything he's in ever.
True.
But it's. I think the scrutiny, like you're saying, the scrutiny that the horror genre is put under, some may not be fair all the time. Part of it is because they, it's their objective. I made a film, an independent film that was the first thing I ever made was horror, and it was they broke down the exact rules that the producer gave him, my mentor that was directing it, broke down the rules. He said it's got to have titties and blood. That's it. And so, all right, fair enough. It's kind of, that's the idea though, is that even within that genre, that's their creed.
Yeah.
You can understand why critics and other people are coming at them.
And that's the thing though, like with, it's not all creeds, because then you have movies like a Hereditary or a Mandy or movies that don't have that, but then people are like, oh, it's boring. But the titties, if you have titties in this, oh, it's cool, but you have titties in it. But movies that don't have that. But that's
the stigma. It's the same as in the States. You and I, you know, obviously three of us and all kinds of blurs. Yeah. We love anime and other animated movies. We understand that there's a different types of genres that it can be animated. But the stigma is if it's animated, it's for kids. In the States, in the West, more or less. It's the idea of being able to understand the nuances and appreciate them. There are nuances in horror too. It's not always the same kind of thing. I do consider House of Lambs a psychological horror movie. It's a psychological thriller, at least. Obviously Hereditary is too. And they're very different between Halloween and or something like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street or Hostel, whatever those kind of things are. So there are nuances and differences in the movies. There are.
Right. And my last point, to agree with your point, I kind of agree with you earlier as far as, what did you say, as far as us enjoying different things with movies. I will agree with you in the sense of, like, I do different, like, the reason I'm really generous with a lot of movies is because you're playing the law of averages. You very rarely get good AAA title movies. Like, it's very rare that you see good ones. So I don't go into any of these movies with the expectation of it being a great movie. I go in with the expectation of, will I have fun? All right, cool. Now, you can surprise me and be like, oh, I had fun and it was a great movie. Like, with something like Shang-Chi, I didn't expect that to be good at all. I was like, will it be fun? Will it have good fights? All right, cool. And it surprised me, and it was fun. I had fun, and it was a great movie. It surprised me.
Yeah,
I'm like, I like to be an optimist because I feel like I'll have more fun consuming content being an optimist versus ripping everything I see apart. Because at the end of, like, me and Otis have different like ways about going about reviewing movies, but at the end of the day, we're all going to watch anyway. We're going to watch them.
Right. I mean, but I'm the type of person that I'll rip everything apart. Like, I can love a thing and rip it apart. Like, Code Geass is my favorite. Everybody, my name is Lelouch V. You see that on the screen. Oh, I can rip Code Geass apart. Yeah, that's easy.
Tell him your score. Tell him your score on Code Geass, what it actually is.
It's an 8. It's an 8.
Yeah. It's not even a perfect.
My favorite anime ever. It's an 8. It's not even perfect. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just me. I rip everything apart equally.
Wild for you. That's, if y'all don't know Oda, that's wild for Oda. That's wild.
Yeah. But we've obviously we're getting a little late here. We've gone on for a while, so we can go ahead and move on to our final segment for the night then.
All right, you ready? Mm-hmm. All right, guys, this is our final segment of the day, our Either Or segment.
All right. Welcome to Either Or. And this is a fun one because the person who actually, as we're dancing all around, I'm still going to talk. I'm not going to stop talking because I'm always on the screen. But we actually, even there you go.
There you go.
The last two days
have been like cursed. But what's funny about this is the person who actually originated this concept, this idea, we were on his show, had him on our show a while back. I think he's in the live chat now. So Michael, if you're here, thank you again, brother. We're using we've taken your idea, we've stolen your idea, made it our own. But but Either Or is a bit of a hypothetical game that we play here on the show where I give two scenarios to our guests or to our co-host or whoever else, and they have to kind of pretty much choose which scenario they favor, and they have to show their work as to why they like them. So today, keeping in line with Halloween and survivors and things of that nature, the either or question for my lovely co-host Charlie Wilson and Otis East: either you team up with the current Laurie Strout to battle Mike Myers or current Sarah Connor to battle a Terminator. Now, you have to show your work, and it is the current versions of these, not them at their apex form, their current versions. They are both in films recently that show them in their more or less current forms. All right? So, also, Mike, you answer too. Go ahead and chime in with your answer, Mike. And Blaine, Mike, if you're there, anybody else, Blaine, anybody else, I'll chime in.
Yeah, Charlie, you want to go first?
It was me first, Mine's easy. It's pretty simple. Out of the two, Sarah Connor's actually beaten and killed the Terminator before, multiple Terminators. Lori's still trying to struggle with Mike right now. So I take the person that actually won in their multiple confrontations with Terminators versus the person that's still struggling with the same person.
Mm. That's okay. Now I am allowed, Mike. Sorry, I'm allowed to challenge, not challenge, but to just bring up some things. You have to remember though that Sarah, in Battling the Terminator, she's always had assistance from other people who were basically sent, who were trained.
Or another Terminator.
They were trained specifically to battle this Terminator for her, literally for her, on her behalf of her life and her son's life too. In Laurie's case, she had no training. She was literally a babysitter that battled a monster. So
true, but at the same time, my point still stands. Okay. She's won before. Lori's still struggling. Again, like you said, she started at 17 and she's over 60 in this more like this last movie, and she's still struggling with this man. Sarah, she may have had all that help, but at least she knows how to kill a Terminator. Lori doesn't know how to kill Mike. Mm-hmm. She's just like, she knows how he can't die, because she said in the last, most recent movie, she knows you can't kill him with brute force.
Right. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Blaine, Sarah Connor, she is still ready for war, and Laurie is a sister battling for her brother.
Yeah. Well, they're not related now. Like, they retconned.
Technically, they changed the canon, but yeah. I see what he's saying. I feel on that. I am Mike. Mike Myers keep coming back, and he is a beast. Yes,
true. You're treating this nigga Mike Myers like the Undertaker now. He just like, all right, stab 50,000 times. So sit up.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be a contrarian here, because I'm definitely taping up a Lori, and we're not trying to kill Mike. We just gonna trap him in cement and then watch that cement forever. Like, just put it in the middle of a field of people. Have your guns ready. You know, just
you think he won't get out?
He gonna get out eventually, but by that time I'm gonna be somewhere else. He gotta find me.
He's gonna find you though.
Your tactic is like,
I'm not gonna be stupid and let my address be picked up by this fucking random crazy ass doctor in the insane asylum and give it to him. You're not gonna find me. I'm gonna be off the grid.
H2O, 20 years later, she changed her name, cut her hair, moved to a whole different state, and that nigga still found her.
Red that's con. Petty though. That's petty. Red con. okay. No, I feel you. So again, I always have to challenge in some way. So one thing I'll say is that, how do you intend to get Michael Myers to a place that has this sweat cement that you can trap?
Hey, I'm gonna use Lori as a trap. Like, you go sit there.
Oh, you can use her as bait. You can use your partner. Your partner as bait.
Sit down there. He's gonna come. We'll wait. We got time.
This the dirtiest wild. Pool. This dude's pool is so that's, dirty.
That's literally the plot of the last Halloween movie. That's what happened. They trapped him in the house.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you play dirty pool. You play pool with like cue balls that are made of ash or something. But okay, that's fine.
You saw this shit says it says either you team up, and this nigga's like, yeah, I'm sacrificing her.
If she get out, that's up to her. I don't know if she want to get out at this point. Like, you've seen the movie. Does she want to escape? I don't know.
I don't know either way
it goes. here's
what I'll say to you too, Dev. So this past week, Otis and I, we started playing some Back for Blood together, right? And there was a part where we had to battle our way later on the levels, like through the ship to get to the end. And I was like stuck on a wall trying to do something. And I turned around, I saw Otis gone. They gone up the other side of this. I was like, damn, man, I'm fighting a horde of zombies. And Otis is gone. He's bolted. That's okay.
I came back and we both made it out. Okay, we both made it out. I just had to get some ammo because I was out. Okay,
you had to come back.
I was supposed to just sit there and punch at the zombies. I was out of ammo. Okay, they had unlimited ammo at the other side, so I went to the other side to get it.
Okay, I got when I get it, we're good.
And we beat the board. We did not.
And we did. But I do know that in an apocalypse to distance myself from Otis before things get really, really bad. I know this already. This has been established in multiple episodes already of the show. So okay. All right. But I will give full credit to both y'all. Both y'all made very valid points. Both y'all are, you know, one for Sarah, one for Lori. And obviously the same thing with Blaine and Mike. Great points. Y'all both valid, very valid answers. So right on.
All right. When I get it, don't worry, I ain't gonna leave you when I get it. It's fine. We're gonna ride it out.
The tall boys, those are a problem. I don't like those things. I prioritize them first. They gotta go.
I saw in some other playthrough or later on too, how what they can start doing as far as like as they pick you up, they can just hold you up in the air while other ones attack you and stuff. Yeah, they are not friendly. They are not friendly.
Yeah, the backup bloodstream is coming soon. It's definitely coming soon.
Yeah, we got Mike on there too. Mike, you can join up with us. Blaine, you can join up with us too. Whoever.
That's a four-man squad right there.
It's a four-man squad right there.
All right, y'all. Well, this has been, thank you everyone for tuning in. Thank you, Blaine. Thank you, Mike, and the other anonymous person that's been watching the whole time. Thank you guys for tuning in for the live show, the In and Out podcast. We will see you guys next Sunday at 5:30.